Also known as Jan, do we have a need for them to be closely together?
I was gonna say we'd love to have people move up.
Yeah. I'm just wondering if I say I could do it while
yeah,
I'm
yeah, that's
up.
Right. Because
like, should I say because we are hoping to have some interactive cards, or is that true? Will they be talking to each other? That is part of it. Why am I thinking?
Yeah.
No?
Just
oh, it's
say
not
we
small groups.
Encourage you to move up.
Okay.
And,
oh, we're having people raise their hands.
Thank you all for coming. We're going to start in a minute or two. I'm sure you've been asked this before in a workshop or two, but if you could come towards the front, even if you're planning on leaving, we would appreciate it just so that we can see your faces and that if we, if you have some interaction with fellow people, it makes it a little easier. These rooms are gargantuan. And thank you all for responding. I appreciate it. Excellent. You know how it is when you talk, and everybody in the church is in the back row, and you're talking to the empty pews. Thank you. Okay, welcome. I'm Mary Cunningham. I'm one of the presenters here today, and we'll be introducing ourselves and getting into our topic about equipping professionals. Thank you all for coming. I would like to get us singing. I am a musician and have a music ministry in Reading, Massachusetts, and I would love to get you all singing. So if you could sing after me, I won't make you stand. But you all probably all know this song, and we were planning a different song about building bridges, because we're talking about how the professions will talk to each other and build bridges. But on this glorious day, let us sing. Oh, we give thanks for this special day, for all gathered here, and those far away. For the time we share with love and care. Oh, we give thanks for this special day. Thank you. Beautiful singing.
All right. Hello and good afternoon. I am Lori Emerson Clare, and I am the Director of Congregational Life in Des Moines, Iowa, but I'm actually here today as a representative of the UUAMP board. I have been vice president of the UUAMP board, and I'm actually been chairperson of the certification committee, which is one of the programs that we're going to talk about today. And UUAMP is the Unitarian Universalist Association of Membership Professionals. And I'm gonna invite our speakers to introduce themselves, and then I'm going to do a little roll call to see who all we have in the room.
I'm Jan Gartner.
Not yet. That one's on.
I know, but I can't see half the people.
I'm Jan Gartner, UUA Professional Development Specialist. I work in the Professional Development Office at the UUA.
Thank you. And I'm Mary Cunningham, and I am the chair of the Music Leadership Credentialing Certification Program. We recently changed our name also in the UUA, and I am the choir director in Reading, Massachusetts. That's
okay.
About it. All right, here we go.
Thank you. Hi, I'm Tandy Scheffler. I am the chair of the Religious Education Credentialing Committee. and I work as the Minister of Faith Formation in Oak Ridge, Tennessee. Glad to be with you today.
All right. Well, we are excited that you are all here and wanting to learn more about continuing education opportunities. So if this is not the right room and you were wanting governance, which we had some people confused, now would be the time because we are going to talk about continuing education. We want to kind of know who's in the crowd. So let's start with some hand raising if you are a lay leader. All right. We've got lots of lay leaders here. We need to applaud you all because the lay leaders are the rock stars, right? They're here and they're just doing it for the passion of the cause. So let's then find out what musician leaders or musician staff we have in the room. Any musician staff? Musical staff? Okay. Any religious? Oh, waving. Okay, not musicians, but waving. Okay, that's okay. You can wave. We want to encourage friendliness. Do we have any DRE staff or religious education staff? Excellent. And membership staff? Couple in there, very good. What about ministers? Any ministers? Okay, that's fabulous. What about UUA staff or regional staff? Oh, there we go. Okay, so we have a good cross section of, oh, what did I forget?
Administrators.
Oh, my goodness. See,
never
I did,
forget your administrators.
Oh, there you all are, right. Here's my excuse, and it's not a good excuse, but I was just going down the row. I'm like, okay, I got all the area. And administrators, we need some. We don't have anyone. Okay.
I'm also just
so
curious
sorry.
About the lay leaders, like what your role is as a lay leader. Just shout it out.
Treasurer.
Board president.
Board president.
Personnel committee.
Board
okay. Finance.
All right, well,
great.
Excellent. And my apologies to the administrators. That's when you get focused. I'm like, okay, I went down the row. That's covered. Who's next? And not so much. All right, so we are going to call up Jan.
Okay, welcome.
Well, the first thing I want you to know is that I love my job. My job is to help Unitarian Universalism thrive by liberating and leveraging the potential of congregational staff. Do I hear an amen? Amen. And I will say that I have a conviction or a vision for every congregation to have awesome staff, well-equipped, well-treated, spirit-filled, in healthy relationship with each other and with their congregations. So I hope you all share that aspirational vision with me. So I'm gonna breeze through some sort of philosophy on professional development, and then I'll be turning it over to our other presenters to talk about some specific things going on in the different areas. All right. I call a lot of things professional development, and I'm going to say this in a few different ways. Professional development is any experience that helps you grow. So in your current role, helping you do your job more competently, or more confidently, or more authentically, more teaching you, showing you how to help you do your job more in sync with our UU values and principles, giving you a depth of understanding of the ministry that you do in your congregation. It can also be about advancement, preparing for you for a new role or for expanded responsibilities in your present position. And finally, professional development can also be about acknowledgement, about recognition of some kind. That might be compensation, it might be a different job title, it might be certification of some kind. So a lot of things can fall under this large umbrella of professional development. So why is it important? And I'd like to think a lot of this stuff is kind of, you know, duh, but let's just articulate some reasons. And I think first and foremost, it's an obligation of us as Unitarian Universalists to be really intentional and explicit about modeling that we're learners, that we're curious, that we're evolving. James Luther Adams says revelation is continuous. So what does that look like for your congregational staff? Staff are modelers in their congregations. So by you saying, I'm open, I'm curious, I want to know more, I want to be better and be deeper and richer than I am as a professional, that is a good tone to set for the rest of your congregation. And you may have noticed that you can't do your job the same way that you were doing it a few years ago, whether it's technology or the realities of congregational life and family participation. We're having to reinvent the way we do things, even if our job description has not changed. The last thing I'll highlight is the importance of self-care. Professional development in a variety of ways protects against burnout and ensures that your staff are being nourished, because when we work in churches, we're sometimes depleted by that work, unfortunately, but that's a reality. So you want to make sure that you also have opportunities to get filled up, and one way to do that is to kind of get out of the weeds and think about new things. And of course, professional development, you know, if it were just about benefiting me, well then, you know, yay for me, but hopefully this actually is for the congregation, right? So helping them have stronger staff so that the programming can be really awesome, and also leading to a higher level of professionalism and strong staff relationships. There are many different reasons that people want to do different kinds of professional development experiences. So I just want to encourage you, if you're a supervisor or a lay leader who supports staff, to help your staff people get clear on what they need and what they're looking for out of their professional development. Supposing what someone really most needs is to interact, to get to know and interact with counterparts in similar jobs in other places. What might you recommend for that person? Shout it out. Listserv. What did you? Go observe somebody doing the same job. Any other ideas?
Loretta chapter has a monthly Zoom meeting that's a professional development.
Awesome. So professional support group on Zoom, so that's virtual. So it wouldn't even have to be a geographically close thing. Great, thanks for highlighting that. Well, how does that compare? Suppose there's specific skill that somebody needs to build. What are some avenues for that? Workshops. Could take a, it could be a college course, it could be, you know, there's a, could they could read a book, right? So really depending what their needs are, you know, you the way that you use professional development, money and time, which are, as we'll discuss, not unlimited, you know, it's worth some intention around what the different purposes are. Can you guys read this pretty well? I want to just highlight that often we use professional development as a synonym for continuing education, and I think that's part of it. For me, the education piece, gaining content knowledge and skill building, that's one piece, but I don't want to minimize the importance of professional formation, which is really getting grounded in your work, taking care of yourself, enriching your spiritual life, having strong relationships with mentors and colleagues. I believe that all of those things are part of professional development. So some of the things that you might do as part of a professional development plan might be speaking to the formational piece as well as that continuing education piece. And I like to think of this in a metaphor, which is this professional development pathway where the education are the stones, right? You went to a Renaissance module, you read a book, you learned how to use Zoom, and then the mortar is the formational pieces, okay? It might be spiritual growth. It might be working with a mentor, people who helped you help you reflect on your work. And really, the path doesn't really work unless you have stones that are set in the mortar. Just building your skills and your knowledge, you know, that's okay, but really to be a religious professional, I really urge you to work on that mortar too. I want to say a word about staff team development because I'm passionate about it. My little mini what is a team has three C's: complementary skills and styles, common purpose and goals, and collective accountability. And so think about how shared learning, doing things as a team to develop, help you with all three of those aspects of a team. You can hone skills and really learn more about each other's styles and what each person can contribute to the whole. In terms of the purpose and goals, shared learning experiences give you an opportunity to really clarify and unify what your staff team is there to do. And then the collective accountability piece, we're all in this together, and we're going to hold ourselves and each other accountable in a compassionate and productive way. That's about deepening relationships. It starts with trust. And so by sharing learning experiences together, it's a great way to do that. I'm going to just quickly highlight a couple of trends in UU professional development. Certainly online offerings, there's more stuff just available, whether it's just articles and things you can go find on the web, but also courses and webinars or things that are static that live the Tandy will talk about some of the webinars that are available on the Faith Development Office website. And then there are courses that you can take where there might be a webinar and everyone signs in at the same time to do the course together. So that's just been a remarkable breakthrough, I think, in our ability to get more people involved in their development. Cross-professional opportunities and team sensibilities, well, there's been so much siloing, right? I mean, it's like, you know, the ministers, they have their own thing where they learn stuff, and then religious educators have this, and membership professionals have that. And we're really looking partly just for efficiency. You know, do we really have to all make up our own stuff? But even more than that, it's so rich when you get the musicians and the membership person and the religious educator all in the room together talking about something. That's really cool. Adaptive challenges. I won't give you a sermon on adaptive leadership right now, but this is sort of when you're thinking about things that aren't directly knowledge and skills, but how to be a leadership presence during change. You know, how do you hold space for difficult conversations? That kind of thing. It's a different kind of skill building. And certainly I'm seeing an increased emphasis on really helping people recognize that professional development should start immediately and be ongoing. As soon as someone joins your staff, whether it's part of their onboarding, who should they connect with, what should they be reading, what website should they go to, do they know about their professional organization? So early and ongoing. I'm gonna say a few words about the obstacles of time and money. Does anyone have enough time for anything? Raise your hand if you have plenty of time. How about money? You have plenty of time, Joyce is retired. How about money? Anyone have enough money for everything they'd like to do? All right. So what I'll highlight, I should have done these slides differently, for both time and money. Yes. You know what? I think there's a GA way that happens, but also if you email me, I'd be glad to just send it out to you. Yeah. For both time and money, I think this is a very, very important function of the supervisor. How many of you supervise staff? Good, good. You supervise yourself. Okay. So one of the conversations for you to have with yourself is about professional development, goals, and needs for yourself and for your team and your congregation. And so given your not unlimited time and money, what's the best use of it? What really makes sense? So supervisory conversations can be very helpful and clarifying and are intended to be supportive. Equity across professionals, equity does not mean equality. It doesn't mean exactly everybody gets exactly the same amount of money or has the exact same contract specification with regard to time. What it does mean is that there's some kind of common philosophy that you look to decide what each person needs, what makes sense for each staff member. So I'm thinking, for instance, with respect to money, UUMA Minister Association dues are way higher than other professional organization dues. So if part of your thinking and what should we be covering for our religious professionals for professional development, if part of that is about dues, right? Then you'd want to have in your head that that's going to look very different across professionals. We have stuff on the UUA website about professional development in general and about professional expenses in particular. And just so you know, yes, sometimes people have to pay for things themselves and do things on their own time. And that, again, is a supervisory conversation. What is it reasonable to expect that's part of somebody's work, that's built in some way? And what is someone going to do because they really care about it and want to take the time or are willing to do some with their own money? And that's a conversation that is going to look different in different situations. We're going to leave plenty of time for questions, but I want to pass things along. Tandy, you're next.
So I want to talk to you about my passion, and I think I'll begin with a story. When Jan talked about early and often for professional development, in the summer of 1997, I was asked to become the half-time religious educator in the Oak Ridge Church, which is still where I am. And I said yes, and the very next thing that the search committee said was, well, your first day is July 1, and could you travel to the mountain in Highlands, North Carolina? Because July 1 through 5, I think, or whatever it was, I'm looking at Pat, she's nodding her head. Anyway, my very first day on the job was professional development. This was a congregation that had not had a religious educator for a year. So that story could have been very different. It could have been, good, please get started, and we've got all these supplies we need for you to order, and you know there's a group for you to be ready for on Sunday, and do. But instead they said, grow, start. So my very first thing was meeting other religious educators. And I believe it was philosophy of religious education, if I'm not mistaken. So it was also, what is this huge field of religious education? So I'm doing that work, 18 years later, and I don't think it's an accident that I'm still here doing that work and that I began in a way that let me continue. So I want to speak. So I want to talk a little bit more about this revolving door. Just a few questions. Those of you sitting in the room, I want you to just do a quick mental count of the number of religious educators or perhaps other professionals you've had in your congregations. A quick little run through. How many of you have had, for however long you've been there, one religious educator? Raise your hand. How many of you have had a number of religious educators, and perhaps more than you can count? I'd like for you to look around. This is a perennial problem. It was a problem when I came into the work. It remains a problem, and I want for us to be willing to explore that a little bit. My understanding, and I haven't looked up recently, I don't think it's changed, but when I did do a look at it a number of years ago, probably about 8 years ago, the average tenure of a religious education professional was less than 3 years. So if we are about the business of growing people who can change the world, I think we've got a disconnect there with what we look at and how we support and how we grow our people. And we're gonna have a question period, so I'm going to ask you to save your questions. Also, I'm wondering about the number of hours your religious educators work. And, of course, this is totally dependent on your congregation's size. But how many of you are in a setting where your religious education professional is full-time? I'm surprised. Wow. That's awesome. How many part-time? Okay, we've actually got an even number, maybe even a few more full-time. I'm not trying to preach to you about making more hours out of less dollars. I know that we've got to be realistic. But I do think we can get creative about perhaps sharing religious education professionals if you have churches in the same area. I think there are ways to think about finding people for whom this work is their passion and helping them grow and develop and thereby grow and develop the learning and the spiritual development in our congregations. How many of your religious educators have a professional budget of some sort? Let's see again. Boy, that's nice to see. Okay, and the recommendation, do people know what the recommendation is as far as fair compensation? What is it? Who can say? 10%. 10% of salary. I believe it's 10% fair compensation.
Leadership level is 10%.
Yeah. Okay, so again, I think the investment in allowing the person who's doing religious education to have adequate hours and an avenue toward growing and deepening as a religious professional is critical. Being a religious educator calls for wearing many hats. You need to be good not only with children, but with families, with adults, with leaders, with volunteers. It calls for huge people skills. It also calls for huge administrative skills. So how many of you have a religious educator who was a super volunteer and then slid into the job? They cared about it so much they did it. That's a pretty strong pattern in our congregations. So again, nothing wrong with that, but let's acknowledge that when that is the path in, that person needs opportunities to grow and develop. Okay. So please, I've said, no silos, no lone wolves. When you are the one religious educator, or again, we could talk about all these positions, you have got to find your people. So Jan talked a lot about a strong staff team, and that is huge. But there's also the need to find those colleagues, to get together in a cluster, to find mentors. And so whatever your role in your congregation, I hope that you can envision that your religious professionals will stay with you and will grow if they have more to do than just do the job, if there's actually time given to go to cluster meetings and to have an hour a month with a mentor, that kind of thing. So investing again in their development. Our professional organization, we call it LREDA, Liberal Religious Educators Association. It's been around a long time. It started as a fairly elite group of people who were ministers and very, very educated, but now it's for all people who are doing religious education. There are local groups, which we call chapters, and then there's the continental organization. We actually did not separate Canada and the United States. There are a number of listservs, one that's open to anybody, which we call REACH. There's another one open to people who are members of LREDA. There are niche listservs like youth coordinators, Our Whole Lives, the sexuality education. So a lot of things available through Lareda Online. And once a year, there is a conference, always in the fall. It's called Fall Conference. This coming year will be in Morristown, New Jersey. It's going to be called Religious Education Without Walls. A real trend in religious education is that the Sunday morning program is a part of something that we need to offer. There's a much larger aspect to the work, including resources to send out to families and online education. So I think that will be an exciting conference. There are scholarships available for that, especially for that. If anybody's a first-time person going to Lareda, I know I got a very generous scholarship when I was getting started and all of that. Okay. The Unitarian Universalist Association, the place to look here, and I'm not seeing it, let's see, Faith is really the, oh yeah, it's up at the top, Faith Development Office. So when you go up to the UUA website, you want to go to the Faith Development Office in your search. And one thing I wanted to highlight is something being offered called the New DRE. So one best practice for every congregation is if you get a new religious educator, there is a one hour online webinar, especially for new DREs, that I think is excellent. So I highly commend that. There are other monthly webinars that are available online. And there's also a longstanding program called the Renaissance Program. And Pat, if you'll raise your hand, Pat's here. She is actually the person in the UUA, the staff person responsible for these programs. These are 15-hour modules. Often they'll start on a Thursday evening and go Friday, Saturday, or Friday to Sunday. But they're 15 hours of training over the course of several days. And I think two things happen in these modules. One is there is that information imparted and understanding gained. But there's also something about going through 15 hours with your colleagues, which bonds you as a group and allows you to, again, develop those connections with your colleagues that can be sustaining. There are 9 different topics. These are an excellent and fairly affordable. There is a charge, but usually they're held in a church. Oftentimes there's home hospitality. So again, Renaissance modules are a very basic and positive way to offer training for your religious educator. And Pat, I believe you're ongoing in updating those and keeping them relevant and adding new ones. I want to talk next about the credentialing program. How many of you know there's a credentialing program for religious educators? If you were at the Service of the Living Tradition last night, you saw that we had credentialed 9 people, I believe, last night. This is a way to really support someone. If someone says, you know, I'm not just doing this for the next few years, I sense that this is my work, this is my passion. For those people, as their circumstances allow, I think the credentialing program is the comprehensive way for us to develop strong, vital, cutting-edge religious educators. There are 3 levels, so there's something for everyone. There's an associate level. We did not recognize those persons last night. Basically, we're saying this is someone who can come in and run a program. Credentialed, we're saying this is someone who could go to any church in our country and could develop and sustain and strengthen a program. And then we have a master level, which is really saying these people are contributing to the entire association and what we do in religious education. So there's something for everyone. We just revised the program. We're getting good reviews. It is an interesting time we live in. We're seeing more and more that religious educators need to know a lot more about technology and a lot more about multiculturalism than we used to ask. And so rather than saying those are separate sort of skill sets and understandings, we're looking for those things to be part of the entire package that religious educators put forward. So a lot of emphasis on those two areas. A couple of other things I want you to know about the program. A college degree is not required for people to go into this program. Also, in the new program, we're asking that they get finished within 3 years once they start. So we're trying to keep this moving. I want to end with this quote for Margaret Fuller, which is a guiding star, a north star in my life. I believe that we come together in our congregations not just to find like-minded people so we'll make it through life, although that's not a bad thing. Sometimes that's what's involved. But that ultimately we want to grow and deepen at all ages. And if that is in fact the case, which I strongly believe it is, then religious education is fundamental to what we need to attend to and care for in our congregations. Thank you.
So, how many of you were at the Service of a Living Tradition last night? Raise your hands. Awesome. Two things I want to say about that. The music was rather integral to that worship service, wouldn't you say? And I think it is very integral. I know I'm biased, I'm a musician, but I think it's very integral to the life of the church that worship is where, you know, sort of the bedrock of our congregations in many ways. And if your music program is vital and exciting, you're going to be growing in your congregation and you're going to have good things happening. So a happy, well-trained musician is a good thing for you to have. Last night at the service, I was also thinking of Service of the Living Traditions about 15 years ago, if anybody remembers how they used to be. We used to be very staid and very, you know, it was different. I don't need to go into it if you know what I'm talking about. The reason it changed, it was very intentional work done by this wonderful organization that I'm a part of, the UU's Musicians Network. How many of you have heard of UUMN, we call it? Yes, good. Okay. And this organization was formed by musicians all across the country who wanted to talk with each other and share resources and experiences and have each other's backs, and they started meeting and called together an annual meeting and formed this organization, UU Musicians Network. It was very much a grassroots organization. And for all the reasons that it still exists, it really supports musicians in our congregations. Musicians come to you, thank you. Yes, this is the organization. Musicians come to you already trained. When you're hiring a musician in your congregation, there's a bachelor's degree there in science, you know, performance, or a choral conducting master's, or even a doctorate. You're getting people who are highly trained, but many of them are completely they have no idea what a Unitarian liturgy is about. They don't know anything about the background of our faith, and here they have to come and create music with you and your ministry team. So how do we get these fine musicians who are hired into your churches to understand our movement and move it forwards? This is what we do at the Musicians Network. We are a source. The website is an amazing resource. If all your musician does is know about our website and use it, join some of our e-lists. The listservs are amazing resources for members. Where they can ask any question. My minister is preaching on, you know, whatever, Black Lives Matter in March. I need a song, and we need an introit, anybody. And, you know, out comes 6-7 suggestions from everywhere from Alaska to Florida. And we're in conversation with each other constantly, sharing repertoire ideas, and also sharing stories and the ways that we work with our choirs and work with our organists and the other musicians that we supervise. So those listservs are amazing. Let me see if I'm going in order here. The annual conference, we're meeting again in Boston this year in July. It's a wonderful 3-day, 4-day event. And it's usually held in the summer, but there are also district, smaller UU Musicians Network events so that you can suggest those to your musicians to take part in. At the conferences, we do workshops, worships. Some of the best worships you ever would see are at these conferences. Beautiful. 8 o'clock in the morning, though. We do sings, we do choral repertoire sessions, and so just you come home with your arms laden with ideas and actual music, which is wonderful. Let's see, I've mentioned the website. That's also where many of administrators and board presidents may know that that's where you list your job, if you have a job opening. The UU Musicians Network is the place where we're all looking. And that's a great resource there. They're now instituting. We have a brand new website. This is awesome, and there's something called Member Clicks, where we're doing even more conversing. We haven't all adopted that. We're sort of stuck on the UUA listservs. We like those best. There are two. There's one that is open to anybody, and then there's another one that is closed. It's a professional group, and that's where some deeper sharing happens. You know, with some issues around all kinds of things that come up in our jobs. So it's a good thing to be a part of. And how do I move it? Thank you. There are other related organizations that we use to, get information and advance our skills. The American Choral Directors Association has district events all throughout the country. The Chorus America is another one. Also, your organists, your keyboard players will be probably linked into the American Organist, the Guild of Organists, AGO, and that's a very important website. Do anybody know about that website, AGO website? Raise your hand if you've had to deal with that. Some of you, sometimes people are posting jobs there as well. And they all have forums and wonderful resources, so. Which magic button are you pressing? Enter?
Right arrow.
Right arrow. Thank you. Thank you, Jan. And the out of this wonderful organization, has the same sort of people came together and said, we also want a certification program where we know that when someone has gone through this three-year program, they have all the elements that it takes to be a strong music leader. And hence, we have the MLC, of which I am the chair at the present time. It is a three-year program. It is based on attendance at the annual conference where a lot of the classes happen. But a lot of the work is also done in your congregations. The reasons are wonderful. Of course, we're saying with this program that, you know, it's not just important for you to know how to play Bach on the keyboard, but it's also important for you to understand the spiritual impact of the music in the service. And we offer entrances for people to get involved in that work. And so we're really hoping that we're creating music ministers with this three-year program. I cannot overstate how important the skills that the candidates are learning in this program. They're really wonderful. Everything from leading congregational song to developing and managing your music program, ethics and self-care for musicians. What else? UU history, which is also very important because, again, a lot of times musicians are just coming in from any denomination and you want them to understand our denomination as well. The courses are run at the conferences, but we are also thinking in very inspired by the Lareda model of Renaissance modules and also the certification program with the religious educators that we might try to get more of it online so that our musicians don't have to maybe come to the conferences every year. We're working on that to see if we can be more flexible. But if you have any more questions, please feel free to email me. I'm not sure if our contact information will be there, but go to the website. And we have so many people, candidates come to us saying, my minister came back from GA and said I must go and join I have to come here. And they, my congregation sent me. And then we have another person who's turned on and is full of great music. So thank you.
All right. How we doing? I'm confused today. Friday, mid-afternoon. Is everybody ready for a little cat nap? That back to that self-care. I think taking care of myself is going to be falling asleep because that's how I kind of feel this time of day. Well, I'm going to try and wake you guys up a little bit because I'm excited about this. I'm excited to be here, and I want you guys to be excited about it too. So you up for like one last push before your nap, and then you can go sleep during the next program. How's that sound? All right, so my name is Lori Emma Sinclair. As I said, I'm part of UUAMP. Before I tell you what it is again, how many people have heard of UUAMP? Okay, so a few people, right? It's the Unitarian Universalist Association of Membership Professionals. I want to keep repeating it because next time you guys go to a program, I want to see every hand be raised. I want everyone to know that we exist. We are absolutely the babies of this group. Loretta has been around 60 years or so, and musicians like 30. And we've been around for 4. So we're like in diapers. We're kind of still being breastfed. And that is a wonderful thing. And we are being fed by our sister and brother associations. I'm going to say sister, but they're, I don't know. We have developed our association in strong support and through liberal borrowing from Loretta and the Administrators Association and the Musicians Association, and through amazing support from Jan, even though we're not officially in her UUA portfolio, she has been an amazing support for us over the past 4 years while we get going. We were formed 4 years ago exactly for this reason, for what you're here for to learn about. As members, and Susan, I mean, oh my God, how can I not mention Susan? Because Susan, before we were UUAMP, when we were just a group of membership professionals sitting in a room saying, how do we get better at this job? Susan was our, like, I don't want to say grandmother because that might get me in trouble. She was our founding convener of membership professionals because for years before we were an association, we were just a group of people that were doing membership work that knew we could do it better and that we knew we could learn from each other, but we didn't have an association. And so she and some of her other grandparents convened us together at these pre-GA days, and that's how I got involved. Crazy me, I went to one of these pre-GA days because I wanted to get better at my job. We didn't really call it continuing education, at least I don't remember it being called that. It was some more networking and supporting each other and that sort of thing, but it was really community education. I mean, that's really what it was about. And so when we got together and formed an association, we created a mission statement, which I think is one of my slides, if I'm right. There we go. This is actually our second mission statement. Our first one was really long-winded. I can't remember it. That's how long-winded it was. So we decided 2 years ago, last year, to shorten it. And you'll see that basically continuing education and collaboration are what our association is about. And while we could say that those are two separate things, really in our world, they're one. Because we believe that continuing education is tied with collaboration. It's tied with collaboration within each other, like working membership professional to membership professional. It's tied together in that we want to work with the Musicians Association and with the Administrators Association and Loretta to, let's be honest, steal their stuff. Like, you know, if Loretta has a great Ren mod on UU Identity, why would the membership professionals need to do anything? Let's just go to Loretta's programs, send them our check for $275 and go, which we have done. The administrators have an amazing certification credentialing. The language around that's kind of fuzzy. Certification. I never know which association is using which word. But they have an amazing program that is accessible to anyone. They have these great topics, and you don't have to be an administrator to benefit from them. So if you have a volunteer or a lay leader or a staff person that wants to know a little bit more about volunteer management, check out the AUA's program on volunteer management. There's so many wonderful resources out there. And so that's why when we did our new mission statement, we wanted to focus not just on continuing education, but on the idea of collaborating. Like, we are all in this together. I believe we're all in it to share the good word, to steal from Christianity, of Unitarian Universalism. I mean, we want people to know that this amazing faith exists, and we want them to be able to articulate it and to be able to sing it in song and to be able to share it with their friends and to be able to express that. I've totally lost myself. Did everyone hear that? Was that just me? Like, did I just suddenly go flat? Okay. Whew. See, I'm tired. I'm thinking I'm just going to have to yell, because evidently that's not working either. I can talk loud. So can anyone not hear me just talking like in my normal voice?
Oh.
Did we run out of time?
Well, I don't know what to do about that. Can people hear me? Because if you can hear me.
I can do your clicker if you want to stand up there.
If people can hear. Oh, we're going to see if this one works. If it doesn't. Hello, does this one work? Yeah, I think if you lose 3 out of 4, you lose 4, right? I mean, there's a law of averages or something. Can people hear me? I know, but if I can't fix it, I don't know what else I can do. Yeah, it was on before. She used it before when she was singing.
Hey, that was on. They all got.
We didn't turn it off, and she sang songs.
They're all off.
I'm going to unplug it and plug it back. You know, that's the way.
Okay. It's not that I don't want to be accessible, but I also just don't know how to fix this, so we only have 15 minutes. So.
Lori, do you want to?
Oh, she's telling me I have less than 4 minutes.
Okay, just keep going, because we got we're behind.
Okay,
I'm the timekeeper.
She's the timekeeper. I got to keep going.
Keep
accessibility.
Going.
My apologies. If anyone can't hear me, maybe move closer. I can talk to you very closely and intimately. But anyway, so UUAMP started with the idea of continuing education collaboration. But we also wanted to be sure that that collaboration didn't just include our other membership professionals and, you know, other religious professionals. We wanted to make sure it was open to everyone, because we realized that not every congregation has a paid membership staff person or a paid person working in RE or whatever. So we have any congregation. So those of you that raised your hands that had lay people, know that you can go to our website and you can get all of our resources for free. We have samples of everything. We have webinars and book discussion groups and monthly. Try and do a book every other month. It's usually related to membership and welcoming. We try and do a webinar every other month. Sometimes we do those ourselves. Sometimes we see a great webinar, excuse me, that Surge is doing on the topic of welcoming or, you know, hospitality or something, and we ask if we can send our people their way. Again, we want to focus on not wasting time reinventing the wheel, but educating ourselves with whatever resources are out there. And it's really important for people to know that we want all of you to be the best you can be at your jobs. So we want to make sure everything is completely accessible and you can find all kinds of samples and click-throughs and links to programs all on our website. That being said, we just voted at our meeting like 2 days ago to open our membership up to lay individuals and congregations. Because we're really just giving everything for free, we didn't want to be exclusionary. We're about welcoming everyone in and getting the best out of every congregation all over the congregational world. So we didn't want to be exclusionary and say only membership professionals could join. And I think that all of the associations have some degree of lay membership. Ours is just equality across the board. You can join and you're treated exactly, I don't know why I'm standing by this, because that does not work. Committed to that microphone, like I gotta be there. But you get everything the same as a membership professional that as you do as a membership. So you can go to our booth in the exhibit hall. I should know the number. I want to say 213, somewhere in the 200s. But you'll see our big association sign, and you can pick up an application, and you can join. And you can join for only $50. We are the cheapest association of all of them. Mm-hmm. Because we want to be accessible. We want you all to get better at your jobs. Okay.
Whoops. I skipped one.
Oh. We also have a listserv, we have a Facebook page, we have, for people who join, who pay the low fee of $50, you also get assigned a mentor. Unfortunately, we can't assign mentors to people who aren't members because we don't have that many members, and if every congregation requested a mentor, then we would have more people requesting mentors than mentees, right? But when you join, you get the opportunity to have a mentor. That mentor might talk to you weekly or might talk to you monthly and help you learn how to do your job better. In addition to that, last year we applied for a UU Programming Fund grant, and we got an $8,000 grant to begin our own certification process, which is very exciting. You know, everybody's all about being certified and being better. We wanted to do the same thing too. So, I'm going to flip through the next one. Oh, we think that certification is going to be beneficial to our members for the same reasons the other associations do. I mean, it's going to help the professional be better at their job. It's going to help the congregation support their professionals.
It's
going to help us across the board learn and be better. You know, yada yada. Same thing. All the basic idea is that education is good, right? I know I'm running out of time. Yeah. I'm going to get in trouble, so I'm going really fast. One thing I do want to stress about our certification process when it's done being under construction is we've held three A's in our mind from when we started the grant until now. There's a lot of things we're all responsible to do as membership professionals. We're busy people, and membership professionals are anything from 10 hours a week to 40 hours a week. We don't have a lot of time. I imagine you guys are all in kind of similar situations, right? I mean, who has extra time? So we want to make sure that when we provide you an education experience, it's quality and it's also efficient. We want it to be applicable to your job. We're not doing a lot of heady stuff about what it means to be Unitarian, and we're doing things that will apply to your day-to-day functioning in your position. We want it to be attainable. So we have each of our core competencies, which I'm going to briefly go through, as long as I have a second. Am I totally on time?
I want to leave plenty of time for questions.
Yes,
so
I'm out of time.
Why don't you really show the slides so people can see the slides?
So attainable in that we want each one to be 10 to 15 hours of time. That is not going to be the same as the REN mods, where you have to go somewhere for that 10 to 15 hours. Each core competence is going to be different. Some will be webinars. Some will be books you'll be asked to read. Some will be places you're asked to go to a seminar. Some will be things that at the United Way. It'll be a different combination of things, but each competency should be about 10 to 15 hours to complete. And accessible in that we want to keep it regional, we want to keep it financially accessible, and we want to make sure that it shows a sensitivity to a lot of different learning styles. Some people like to read, some people to learn interactively, some people learn face-to-face, some people don't like to learn face-to-face, so we want it to be accessible, attainable, and applicable. Okay, next. These are going to be our core competencies. In the end, we're going to have 10. These are the four things that we think every membership professional has to have. So we're going to ask you to spend 10 hours on each of these and then write a few reflective papers about what you've learned. These are going to be our choice competencies. Because membership is so diverse, some membership professionals are with stewardship, some are with communication, some are with small group ministry. We didn't feel like we could say for sure these are the 10 things every membership professional needs. We want to have four things that we think are core, and then six things, and you're counting it. I'm going to explain that. You're seeing only five up there, and you're thinking she's lost her mind. She's not. There's 10. These five you can pick from. So you can pick two or three that fall in your bucket of job responsibility. The reason I say 10 and not 9 is that just 2 days ago when we had our meeting, it was requested that we add a 10th competency on stewardship. So the slide was done. I couldn't fix it. But there will be 10 core competencies. And this is an example of core competency one and types of things that you will see under the culture of membership, culture of welcome. The committee is still working on this. This is not finalized at all. So we are still a work in progress. As the slide said, we're under construction. We're open to feedback. Members are invited each week to participate in a survey that gives us feedback on core competency five. Core competency six, we want to make sure that it's attainable, applicable, all that, and it works for you as members of UAMP. We're hoping next year to roll out a beta of the certification process, and we'll be inviting people to go through that. That invitation will go out to membership professionals and administrators and musicians, anyone who likes any of these competencies and wants to learn about it. It might be very good for RE to learn about the visitor experience because, you know, DREs have some impact with that, right? So we're working at collaborating and getting better at jobs, and I'm sure I'm out of time. I must be out of time. I'm sorry, technical differences between me and this thing here. That's all I can do.
You know, I just wanted to put in another plug for staff teams and make it sound. I think one of the things that's been a barrier is, you know, it's hard enough just to get one person to the thing, whatever it is, the Renaissance module. And so there's this idea that, like, oh my gosh, getting a whole team, getting everyone on the staff to go do something. But, you know, you can, like, do this in a pretty homegrown way. This could be as simple as having a common read for your staff, that you ask everybody to read a certain book and then you make time for a discussion of it at a staff meeting. Maybe you commit to one morning a quarter where you just go do that balcony view thing and get out of the weeds and talk about something important that you haven't had time for. And then that might spark, you know, I'm realizing we as a team, we really need to understand more about such and such, and you'll find a way to do it. So these things don't have to be gigantic, you know, break it down and have little pieces. Retreats, coaches, having somebody come in and work with you on something, all kinds of ways to do things for staff teams other than like sending everyone across the country to something. Mm-hmm. I do want to say this is a project idea that I piloted about a spring ago, and I had a variety of different kinds of professionals in it. It went well. It is an online kind of staff orientation where they're little mini units that take about 30 minutes each. So one unit might be learning about your congregation's history, and you'd be asked to talk to an elder in your congregation, to read about the history on your congregation's website or other places where your congregation keeps its history. Little things that you can literally do, have a conversation, go find information on a website or in an article. They're meant to take about 30 minutes, and there'll be 8 or 10 topics. So I started it, the pilot went well, and it's meant to be for anybody who has a staff position in a congregation. So hopefully I can get that re-upped so that we can get it available to people in the fall.
How will we know it's available?
My name is Jan Gartner, and my UUA email is jgartner with a T, like partner, at uua.org. So you can write to me for the slides, and you can write to me about that. But I usually put things out on some of the professional organization listservs, and I know I'm not a member of the administrators, so let's figure out a way, because my work is mainly with program staff, and so that's the bias that I've had, but I want to make things very inclusive.
Thank you. So, yes.
I'm just going to put in a plug for the administrators.
Thank you.
We have a table inside the exhibit hall, and we have a certification program. We have a listserv. We have a resource and archive library. You're not alone out there. Mm-hmm. I've been in religious education. I've been a membership professional.
Wow.
Now I'm a business administrator. So,
of that group, is there more you'd like to say or any questions about for administrators? Because obviously, actually, I've been in a church where this year the challenges, the need for more was in the administration part of our whole process, and everything breaks down when there's not smooth functioning, right? With communication, publicity, critical. So any questions for Mary or concerns about administration? Things you came hoping to hear. Okay, thank you so much for stepping forward. And other questions, and I'm going to ask you to stand up like Mary did and belt it out because of our mic situation. And I want to let you know, the gentleman who came back here, lest you think we're a silo and we're the ones without sound.
Oh God, it's
no,
everybody.
It went out in the whole area. Oh, so we're not alone in this.
Perfect.
Yes.
The mics are actually
Oh, the mics.
Oh,
so speak
okay.
Into
so
the mics.
Talk, like,
thank you.
So I just,
Lori, you were brilliant. You were. Lori was standing here because she knew that
but
somehow.
But the recording is probably going to then have me screaming
right
into the microphone.
That's true. That's true. Okay. Questions? Yes.
Yes, I'm working on my website pieces to have more stuff.
Excellent. Our staff team is smaller than some of your congregation staff team.
Right.
But my question in particular is about religious educators. Mm-hmm. Many of our congregations are very small, they're lay-led, and sometimes the religious education program is an afterthought.
Yes.
So they only have a part-time art. And I'm wondering if you have any tricks in your pocket about helping do that attitudinal shift to recognizing REs as professionals that nurturing and support and money.
Right, thank you. So could everyone hear the question? Small congregations, lay-led, religious education is afterthought, right? We need to do something with the kids, right? So, you know, what are they going to do while we're doing blah? So she said, are there any tricks about that? I'm open to group wisdom here. I guess I want to say two things about that. One is, I believe in our changing economy, I mean, clearly we are living in a time where we cannot think about our churches, I think, in the way that we have. What we're doing needs to be evolving now to face our economic reality and changes in our situation. So one thing I really am wanting to see churches explore more readily is sharing professionals, that we not each think we need to have our own little collection, because I can imagine if there were some congregations close enough to come together and hire somebody who could work with the different teams in the churches to then carry out. And together those congregations could send someone to fall conference who would bring it back to everyone. We've got to share, I think, our religious professionals. The second thing I want to say is we need to think of religious education not as a separate program, so that we've got to run all of this and then we've got to do all of this over here. And that is a fairly typical model. But I think some smaller churches are figuring out ways to do multi-generational religious worship experience, to have all ages learning together, offering learning for families rather than just a separate program for children. So I believe just as the internet has connected us all, if you want to think about changes in society, our churches are also going to have to think more in terms of more integration, more sharing of resources, more bringing everybody together. So that's a quick answer. I hope that's helpful. Yes.
Future of RE for their church, and I was able to show them all of the amazing things that I have time to do that they don't have at their church yet because they don't have a professional. So it was really inspiring to them, and they're really reaching now to make that funding happen and get a DRE. So it might be worth having some of your current DREs show these congregations the kinds of amazing multi-generational, not just Sunday school, all the neat things.
Thank you. Thank you. Question, yes.
Well, I'd like to add to the question. I don't know if your experience is like mine, but having been a member of five churches, Unitarian churches over my lifetime, the number one revitalization and growth process for any congregation is to bring in young families. And as a marketing point, you can make it clear to your, oh my God, we can't afford it, crowd. And it's grow or die, frankly. Mm-hmm. The biggest
thank you. Other questions? Yes, in the back.
I'm Tracy. I'm a DRE in Goleta, California.
Gonna have to shout.
My question is, I'm very fortunate. Our congregation sees the need. I work 25 hours a week, and they see the need for a professional in this area. But my challenge is that I feel like anything related to kids' families is my responsibility. Mm-hmm.
Thank you. I'm tired thinking about it. I mean, just to hear, did everybody hear? She's feeling like she is like all of a sudden, because she's the 25-hour a week religious educator, she's the person to do everything with the children. Am I reflecting? Yeah, and making it easy. Pat, do you want to speak to that?
I was going to say, I wanted to speak to, add on to
all of this.
Which I think will also help.
Stand up. Yeah.
Sorry. And that is that, you know, you've heard the word multigenerational come up a lot here, and actually it's a lot easier for small congregations to make that paradigm shift to thinking about not having silos of, you know, little ones over here and this and that, but to do multigenerational ministry, whether it's worship, learning, social action, fellowship, and there's a brand new set of web pages on UUA.org, multi-gen, I think it might be multi-generational, but if you just look up multi-generational on the UUA website, there's all kinds of congregational stories of how they're doing things in all of the different areas, and I think it helps tremendously because it breaks down the silos, and both all ages learn from each other, so I think that's one way to look at it.
I have a follow-up question, because we do multi-gen services.
Stand up, please.
Yeah. My follow-up question, so we do multi-gen services, except when that happens, then it's my responsibility to plan it all.
Yeah. I think we're getting into maybe a conversation that we need to have. I mean, I think this is Renaissance module philosophy. I think you're asking something. So I'd like to meet with you afterwards, I think is what we'll do with that question. Thank you. So I do want to say one thing, and I think this is true for all of us, whether we're administrators, the musician, whatever. You know, Mary, I'm going to look at you. If there's a question about music, it's like Mary, the only person in the congregation who knows music. So I want to encourage all of us, if we are there as professionals, to encourage congregants to look toward each other. When families want to come and tell me about a problem with a child, I always say, well, have you talked to the family, you know, talk to each other. And I think the more we step away from being the person who needs to do it all, and say, well, I encourage you all to talk about that. I really encourage you to figure out how you want to do childcare, congregation. You know, that turning toward the congregation rather than trying to be everything. Just admit at the start you're not going to be able to. So then you've got to work smart. But we'll talk more. Yes. Cool job. She's here, yeah.
It seems like I was wondering if there's any thought into distance learning.
Yes. Salivate.
Immediately, but the slide that was up there said there's 9 modules. There's actually 10 modules, soon to be an 11th one that's just about done. One of them, UU History, is now completely online. And the next new one that hopefully by this fall, there will be also UU Theology for Religious Educators completely online.
Cool.
You'll see some of that, and then it basically depends on. what your needs are and who else is in your area, and you can just, if it's about Renaissance module, email me.
Okay.
We can talk.
Great. Thank you for that question. One last question. Anyone? Yes.
You mentioned that there's this revolving door.
Yes. Well, I think I tried to speak to this. I thought Mary brought up an interesting point. When you hire a music director, they may not know Unitarian Universalism, but they likely have directed a choir, have a music degree. Sometimes you get a religious educator who's been an educator or has worked with families in some way. But fairly, I mean, not I won't know how often, but often it's something that someone says because they care about it and want to do it well, and they don't have a professional background. So again, that's why I really emphasize the need for professional development. I think also, I don't know your name in the back, Tracy, but I think anytime we make the religious educator also the childcare coordinator, the snack purchaser, you know, so I think the laundry list of things that can fall to that person, a number of that of those things are just time suckers that are not really what a professional needs to be doing. So there are many reasons, but I hope that's helpful.
And I'll just add that yeah, burnout, there are a number of factors. The improving economy, we have some really high level people that are going back to other professions. Let me also just say that some of what we're seeing a professional shortage right now, both ministers and religious educators. I'm not sure about the other professions. Some of that is a great thing. It used to be that the norm was, what? You hire a nice mom out of the congregation, you might exploit a nice mom out of the congregation. And people are getting it, that these are professional positions that deserve a lot of intention. And so we're having trouble keeping up. We're not doing well feeding the pipeline. So it's partly turnover and it's partly shortage for really awesome reasons.
Yeah. Good question, though. I want to close with some words from one of my personal favorites, Howard Thurman. And I want you to think about these words in terms of the staff in your congregations or your own role as a religious professional staff member. Do not ask what the world needs. Ask what makes you come alive and go do it. Because what the world needs is people who have come alive. Be well.
Thank you.
a little rushed.
Yeah.
I'm going to go ahead and start plugging in then, because we've got to rehearse somebody who's presenting from all sides. My stack's overflowing right now.
Yeah.
Let me focus on this for a few minutes and then we'll do that. This is the computer. I'm just trying to get the audio, I mean the video link up. Okay. Melanie, where is Zoom on this machine? You need to have the Zoom app installed on the computer to run a Zoom meeting.
I've used it on this computer.
Oh, okay. Okay.
So
Zoom's got to
be
here someplace. Okay. When you told me that password, I thought you meant you were using a loaner.
Oh, no. Okay. He fixed it and had
to
wipe it.
Ah, all right, I'm with you now. There we go. Thank you. site having a just that simple, huh?
So make sure, I guess people aren't realizing that these are all being recorded.
Yes.
And if you don't talk into the microphones, it doesn't get recorded.
Right.
So we could probably turn down the volume a little bit in here, but otherwise, just for recording sakes, people still need to talk into the microphones.
And the handheld is working, so I can use that because I'm going to stand over there.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Let me just double check.
Now, does that mean that the computer audio will also be on the recording?
Hey.
Uh-huh.
Okay.
Good. Yes. Check, check.
Where can I plug this?
Oh, there's a power strip in the lectern here.
Is this the ID that Raymond's expecting to come into?
I would assume so. That's the one I...
Okay.
That's for the meeting, right?
Yep.
And is there a camera that's supposed to be in here?
We have to find a place to put this so that Raymond can see.
May be able to hook it, yeah, right on the edge of the lectern. I expect that has to be plugged in before I start Zoom, because otherwise it's just going to use the computer.
Yeah, and what we want it to do, because it's going to have to go this way because I'm going to stand there.
Oh, I see.
He needs to see me.
He needs to see you.
Yeah.
Got it. And you're going to be here?
Yeah.
That'll work like that. Seems.
I don't think we do, Melanie. Yeah, I have to restart Zoom. And I've got to plug the webcam in. It's always a detail, you know?
It's the little, you know, the little things.
Yeah, that's why we have wires. Voila.
Oh, cool. All right. So now we have to see where Raymond is.
Yeah.
You're standing right here.
Perfect.
That'll be great.
That's perfect.
Yeah.
Awesome. Couldn't be better.
So far, so good. We just have to find Raymond.
Yeah, I really want him to come into the meeting because I want to check the quality of his audio into our computer.
So is there a way to see if he's logged in yet?
He'd show up down here if he was. Yeah, we'd see him on the video. There's nobody else in the meeting right now.
Well, it seems easy. You guys got it up and running. What do you need me for?
Can we get a refund?
You know, because this is like the umbrella theory. Mm-hmm. If you carry an umbrella, it's not going to rain.
Mm-hmm.
So we asked you guys to be here.
Just in case.
To make sure.
Yeah.
You're famous now. Is he answering the text?
I'm just wondering if I should email him.
We can email him an invitation.
So is there a microphone on here that he'll be able to hear you? Do you need to talk to him? How do you do that?
That is a great question. We need the audio to be bidirectional in and out of here so that this is the mic on the phone call as well as into the room. That's why you're here.
Mm-hmm. We could probably feed everything that's coming from into that mixer into here. Is there a mic input?
I doubt it.
Mm.
It's probably just on that.
Oh, let's see. I need to put this on. This is showing the orange. Do I need to take that off?
No, that's for wireless, and we're wired.
guess.
Is there a mic on the webcam?
I don't know, because when I use it, I've got my computer there, and I don't know which mic is picking it up.
Oh, but there is a mic that picks it up when you use this. And
yeah.
There probably is a microphone on here.
So as long as you're standing close to it when you're talking, we'll have to just test and see how well that works. That's how he will hear you. And
so I'm thinking.
But will that get into the room system?
Will this microphone?
Yeah.
Probably, if it's coming through the computer, yes.
Okay.
Well, no, because she can't hear herself. The audio is separate. No. I really don't think that it would play what's coming through this microphone through the headphone jack.
How do I find out what the Zoom address is? So if I look at your email, will it show up the Zoom number? Is that the number that was on there before?
Yeah. Let's flip back to the number.
Flip back to here?
Can I turn this down just
what
a little
this?
Bit?
Excuse me.
Oh, no. It's a different meeting number.
Ah, okay.
Yeah, just.
The speakers up?
No, we don't. I don't think so.
Let's
just
hang on
wait.
To him just a
no,
hang on to
we
him for a second.
Go ahead and send him an invitation from inside Zoom.
Okay.
Are you running Outlook on here?
Yeah.
Okay. Let's puzzle this one through.
I would be shocked if it actually played audio from this microphone through the headphone port. Because people don't need to hear themselves when they're talking on Skype.
No, but if you plug earbuds into there, you're hearing and you're generating audio input through the earphone jack. So that jack is audio in and out. Because if you're wearing earbuds, it's a bidirectional conversation.
Oh, it's like a phone.
Oh, but this isn't plugged into the earphone jack.
No, this is through USB.
Right.
Which you may have to go in and specify in your sound settings.
How do I do this?
Your audio input.
I send him a...
Oh, just go in here. Have you got his email address?
Yeah.
Okay, we still have the Zoom meeting up. Yes. You can do it from in here.
Oh.
Invite.
Okay.
And go ahead and select your email or default email.
Oh, this Outlook.
Yeah, it should be.
Well, it's, we won't know until it comes on, so.
Right.
We shouldn't try and start troubleshooting something we don't know what it's going to be.
Right. Actually, she's talking into this microphone. That's going to be coming out of the room speakers. Probably that microphone's going to hear that. Put it into the call. It's the same way the video is going into the call.
Mm-hmm.
So that may be adequate. We'll just have to see how well he can hear that.
Right.
Part.
Absolutely.
Right. My experience with these mics is they're usually pretty good.
The